From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Eric Logan, filling in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2006 when the Community Healing Network was launched, and it is the only organization focused exclusively on building the global grassroots movement for emotional emancipation. You'll hear more about that later. Mobilizing Black people to heal from and end the trauma caused by the falsehood of white superiority and Black inferiority, and all the follow-on effects of that on Black mental health. Today's connection was also made in June 2008 when the B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month was created to bring awareness to the unique struggles that underrepresented groups face in regard to mental illness in the United States. Please allow me to start with a personal story of an event that occurred when I was just 10 years old. On September 15, 1963, the congregation of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, greeted each other just as they do every Sunday at the start of their Sunday service. In the basement of the church, five young girls, two of them sisters, gathered in the ladies' room in their best dresses, happily chatting about the first days of the new school year. It was Youth Day, and excitement filled the air. They were going to take part in this Sunday adult service. Just before 11 o'clock, instead of rising to begin prayers, the congregation was knocked to the ground as a bomb exploded under the steps of the church. They sought safety under the pews and shielded each other from the falling debris. In the basement, four little girls were killed. 14-year-olds Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair, Carol Robinson, and 11-year-old Cynthia Wesley. While this happened hundreds of miles away from my urban church, the church I attended in Baltimore, Maryland, I personally felt the reverberations of that attack. And I remember walking down the stairs of the church to the basement for a Sunday school class along with the other pupils and deliberately touching and feeling the green textured wall of the stairwell and wondering if a bomb might be lurking behind that wall. As a teenager and as an adult, realizing that the four identified suspects would not be brought to justice, it deepened both my anger and my fears and my resolve. I share this story as an example of trauma I experienced and which still resonates with me today. Over the course of this hour, I expect that you will identify events over the course of your life which have impacted you similarly. This hour, we're going to explore the impact of trauma, collective, individual. What is it? Why healing on an individual and collective basis is needed? Disparities in mental health treatment for minorities? And what are emotional emancipation circles and how these address healing for both mental and emotional health? I'd like to welcome my guest. We have a full house today, and it's really wonderful. Melody Funches, Director of Mental Health and Wellness of Common Ground Health, Emotional Emancipation, or EEC is the term we'll use going forward, facilitator and trainer, effectively known as Mama Mel in the community. She oversees projects to improve mental and emotional health outcomes for youth and adults across the Finger Lakes region. Funches has been a member, a family and youth advocate for more than two decades and has worked extensively in the areas of family engagement and empowerment, as well as community building. Most recently, she served as CEO and principal at Ubuntu Village Works, LLC, that's Ubuntu Village Works, an organization dedicated to creating culturally responsive and community-driven healing and wellness spaces. Prior to that, she served as Director of Community Engagement, Family Support at the Mental Health Association of Rochester Monroe County. In this role, she built connections to diverse communities and ensured family and peer perspectives, making sure they were effectively represented and reflected in the work of systems that affect their lives. She's been a guest faculty for United Way's African American Leadership Program. Right?
Yeah. You did your homework.
I did. And actually, I'm an AALDP graduate as well as a faculty member as an adult myself.
But you're just not part of the best class.
The best class was 1999. That was when I was there.
No, we're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that. I know the best class.
2005.
2005. Excellent. Welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I don't know how our paths haven't crossed prior to this, but I'm glad they have. So thank you. I'd like to also introduce Karen Pashadley, EEC Master Facilitator, Certified Trainer and Coordinator. She coordinates EEC activities in Rochester. She's an experienced director with a demonstrated history of working in higher education, skilled in nonprofit organizations, event planning, program evaluation, student leadership, and volunteer management. A strong, community-focused, and strategic professional. Thank you, Karen, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you for bringing this crew. It's a great crew, Melanie. J. Lamar Hanna, EEC facilitator and mental health clinician. Lamar, welcome.
Thank you.
And Ederson Allen, EEC facilitator and yoga, one of the healers of Monroe County's Healing Village. Poetically undefined, as he says here, a spoken wordsmith, slam poet, actor, yogi. This is just really good stuff. And you were certified for Y, I don't know what this is, RYT 200 HR yoga instructor?
Just a 200-hour certified yoga instructor.
Great. Well, welcome and thank you for being here. And
glad
you told
to
me to call you Lamar the therapist.
No, Lamar the therapist.
See, I'm going to get confused.
So
it's going to happen.
And since we're going through people's credentials, I'd like to also add in,
please,
I am a mental health clinician currently at Sankofa Family Counseling Services, and I'm also a hip-hop artist. And one of the things that I like about the EECs is that they utilize holistic approaches that are for us and by us.
Thank you.
And so I appreciate you having us here, and shout out to Mama Mel for welcoming me in.
Yes, Mama Mel, thank you for bringing this crew together today to talk about an important topic, and one that frankly was new to me until we got together to start chatting about it just a couple of days ago. So what I like to do is, I'm guest hosting, I like to make sure that I get a chance to talk with the key guest ahead of time, just so I can kind of know where we are and chart out what we're going to do. And my head was just filled with an incredible amount of information. So thank you very much, Melanie.
No worries.
So let's start with the B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. What is it and why is it needed?
Well, first, when we start, we're going to know who B.B. Moore Campbell was. B.B. Moore Campbell was a journalist, an author, and a fierce mental health advocate. And she was also the parent of a child who lived with mental health challenges. And when her daughter, Maia, was going through her mental health challenges, she learned about what was not existing for Black folks, right? And her and some other parents actually founded NAMI Urban Los Angeles to highlight the needs that existed. And so she's written several books. A couple of them are 48 Hour Hold, Singing in the Comeback Choir. And she has, and I would just recommend for people to really look into her and look into her work. And she was just an incredible advocate. And after she passed away from cancer, Congress in 2008, like you said, deemed July B.B. Moore Campbell Minority Mental Health Month for her legacy in this work, and highlight and keeping a spotlight on the disparities and on the different ways that we can highlight and bring healing to communities of color.
Wow. Thank you. Why was it needed?
Because to be blunt, nobody was checking for us. Mm-hmm. The mental health system and psychiatry generally are based in white supremacy. If we go all the way back to the period of our enslavement, there was something in what would now be known as the DSM called drapedomania. Basically, drapedomania was a mental health disorder that they said you had if you wanted to escape enslavement. So people not wanting to be enslaved, if you're Black, you're mentally ill. And so with things like that as a base, we, because of the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority, over the course of time, we have been pathologized, we have been labeled, we have been misdiagnosed, overdiagnosed, underdiagnosed when we actually do have need. And the solutions, because they're based on Eurocentric constructs, the basic constructs of the systems that we have to go through are not made for us. And people do not have, and when like our clinicians go through training, they are not required to find out about what are the organic ways which other in which other cultures see the world so that they can connect better with them. So they will come in and they are not necessarily taught to deal with their own biases and all these other things, which create in the therapeutic milieu an opportunity for harm. So we need a month that that highlights the plight and the situations faced by people who are not white. And because it's minority mental health month. It's not necessarily Black mental health month, but it's minority mental health. It's all of us, all the BIPOC communities, and highlight why we need specific culturally responsive services and supports.
Thank you. That's a great foundation. I mentioned, I believe in the intro, about the community healing networks. Could we talk a little bit about that and why they're needed?
Absolutely. Community Healing Network, like you said, started in 2006, and they have a goal for global emotional emancipation. You cannot heal what you don't reveal. And you cannot get free. You can't liberate if you don't free your mind. Right? And we have all, like what I tell people is that just being Black is not enough. We have all been fed the air and the water and all the things of white supremacy. And because it was actively done to us, we have to make deliberate and intentional action to get it out of us. And that is the goal of Community Healing Network. And I'd like to ask Karen to also speak on it because she is just a master with all things CHN and she is just dope.
Thank you, Mel, for that endorsement. And I guess I would add is, like, in addition to, you know, the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority, is around defining that lie, it's like really talking about how we embrace the truth. Mm-hmm. And so Community Healing Network is really about the truth. So not even so much focusing on the lie, but really we need to know the truth, not just Black folks, but all of us. And so, but Community Healing Network and EECs allows us that space to truly begin the process of learning the truth. And I encourage people to really visit communityhealingnet.org because that's where you're going to find so many of the opportunities for the CHN, but really also flourishing while we're Black. So CHN really focuses on that. So there's a pledge on their website that says go ahead and sign in to say we pledge to be free, to really create a society where Black folks really know the truth and defy the lie and live it every day. So that for me is they have, and also for folks who are looking forward to joining an EEC, they have a virtual one coming up in July, later this month, and we're also beginning, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, different EEC circles in the Rochester area. So
one of the things I believe that each of you mentioned is the fact that this is sort of so pervasive, the lie of white superiority that shows up in current culture about white supremacy, making sure that certain things aren't taught in schools, mm-hmm. in some states, things of that nature. What you're saying is that's a part of the air we breathe, and so all of us have been impacted by that. You want to talk about that some?
Absolutely. When over 500 years ago, a lie got told. Mm-hmm. And based upon that lie, and we know about lies, when you tell a lie, you usually have to tell another lie to cover up the first lie and another lie to cover up the first lie. And in that process, entire systems were built. And if you keep telling a lie, a story long enough, people start to believe it to be fact. And so you have people who believe these things to be fact and had systems built and laws put on the books all based on a lie. And so it's a collective trauma. And other communities have had traumas like this. This is not something that is unique to diaspora and Africans. If you think about our indigenous brothers and sisters, not only we're talking about the Trail of Tears, but we're talking about boarding schools, mm-hmm. where the lie, where they said, you know, you kill the savage and save the man. You know, if you look at the internment camps of the Japanese during World War II, where all of a sudden people who lived among us, were with us, and were wholly American in their heart, were put into, were shuttled off. If we look at the Holocaust, where people simply because of who they were culturally were thought to be needed to be exterminated, right? And they live after living side by side with their neighbors, right? So when you have any community that has had this collective, like this historical collective trauma, there needs to be healing because what we know from science is a science called epigenetics. And what basically it, I tell people is epigenetics is the scientists catching up with our grandmothers. And I say big mom. When they would say, don't make sure that pregnant women stay happy so you don't mark the baby, right? Mm-hmm. What we know is when you're, the easiest way I explain this to people is when your grandmother was pregnant with your mother, the eggs that made you were inside of you, inside your mother, inside of your grandmother's womb. So any trauma that your grandmother experienced went through her to the baby and into the eggs. So compound that by at least 12 generations of chattel slavery, 246 years, followed by 100 years of Jim Crow. And because we've only been, we're only 58 years out from Jim Crow.
Right.
We work with people. There's people who are listening to this call now who are over 58 years old in your lifetime. My mother could not try on shoes in a store. She had to have her feet traced on cardboard and have the card. So her shoes were always too big.
Right.
Because they didn't want dirty end feet in the shoes or even in the store. So now if she, my mother carried that and passed that on to me, that gets passed on to my children, whether I want it to or not. So we've got to, and so we have generations of that that need to be free, do we need to be freed from?
I'm glad you mentioned the fact about that being within our lifetime. I can vividly remember, I can't tell you what age I'm at what age I was at the time, but it was pretty young, you know, walking down the street with my mom, my dad, my little brother, and saying, hey, I want to go in here and get some French fries, mm-hmm. right? I want some fries. I'm hungry. And my dad saying, that's the White Tar restaurant. They don't want us in there. And, mm-hmm. I grew up in a family, you know, we each deal with oppression differently, right? I will be very honest with you. I grew up in a family, especially among my cousins, where if you didn't like us, there's something wrong with you.
Because we're great.
So that was kind of the thing. It's like, well, if they don't want our money, that's fine. Because I can deal with that. But the fact is, we still absorb those messages.
Mm-hmm. We absolutely do, because there is a study in things called microaggressions. And in the studies of microaggressions, Dr. Sue and several and some great black psychologists have also come along and said that the average African-American, and this was back then, this study is like 20 years old. At that time, they said that black folks experienced on average 14 microaggressions a day. Microaggressions are these little micro like insults and things like, have you ever had something where something happens to you and you're questioning, was that? They're saying that black folks experience 14 of those a day. And those take a toll. And then if we're putting that with the things that we carry ancestrally and what it just takes to wake up in America black, there needs to be something, a very deliberate and intentional way to heal from that.
So I'm going to, for just a second, channel maybe one of our listeners or two that might say something to the effect of, well, yeah, that happened, but just get over it.
You know, and I've heard this. What did they say to the Holocaust people? What did Jews say? Never forget.
Right.
Same thing with 9/11.
Never forget. And see, 9/11 is another example.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that happened to a very specific group of people with trauma, there's three E's. An event, something or a series of some things happen. There's an experience. You experience it with shock, horror, and it shakes you to your core, fear, and effect. It changes the way you see the world and what you believe you know about yourself, about people, the whole thing. These are all traumatic events. And we have to acknowledge that the trauma reverberates. You know, you like people say, get over it. No one tells the Jews to get over the Holocaust.
Right.
Right. No one. And let's take it to a small, not even a global level trauma. Let's take it to a personal level trauma, the loss of a child. Something that's out of the natural order. Would you ever tell a mom to get over her dead baby?
Right.
How many people died in the Ma'afa, the passage for of the transatlantic slave trade, because they chose the sea, right, or for other reasons? But you can't, to tell me to get over that when it's the reason that I'm on this soil is egregious and an affront to my very being.
And I would, please, if I could just add, no, I would just say, rather than saying get over it, how about we say move past it and be free? So again, helping folks realize that's an offense. And so for us, it's like we really are going to be free. And so we would ask that, right, change the language.
Yes.
Again, it's the get over, but it's happening too often. And it still had, like you said, the air we breathe.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about even in my context, I work with young people, young adults. And many of them don't know the history. And so it's that space. That's one of the traumas of the absence of history, the greatness. So with that absence, you can't get over that.
No, you cannot.
We are going to embrace that, learn it, and be free. And so again, changing the language is what we would ask rather, right, than get over it.
And to that point, it's also hard to get over something that is still ongoing.
Yes.
Yes.
When we say we're 58 years past Jim Crow, right? We're still in the new Jim Crow. We're still at a time where we're being harassed, brutalized, overly incarcerated, overprescribed, overdiagnosed in that system by itself. And when we're talking about getting free, it's not just free from these contemporary and these past injustices. It's also from the physical manifestations of this trauma, the high blood pressure, the diabetes, the high cholesterol, right? That tachycardia, that heart that just can't settle down, that loss of breath that happens when not only you've experienced a trauma, but grandma and great-grandma and granddad and great-granddad have experienced that same thing over and over again. So we would love to get free and get past it, but we have to actually do some work on our end. And there also needs to be work on the other end as well.
Right. Because, and when if people say, well, you know, I don't know, right? If someone's saying, like, what do you mean the physical things? Study there on our DNA, at the end, tips of our DNA, there are these things called telomeres. If, when you look at, they looked at telomeres of women. Black women, according, the telomeres and their weathering can talk about how old you are internally, how old your organs are. When they looked at the telomeres of black women versus white women, black women were 7.5 years older than their white counterparts. And when they controlled for all other things, it was because of the effects of racism. Hmm. So, I mean, we've got to heal. We've got to change the narrative, change the words, and get through this, get past it, so we can be liberated. But as, you know, for people who are not diasporan African, the thing is for you to recognize that a wrong happened, whether you did it or not, right? Even if you didn't do it, it's part of your responsibility to help heal it. And part of it is to not tell people to get over it.
Right. Mm-hmm. In case you just joined us, I'm Eric Logan sitting in for Evan Dawson. On Today in Connections, we're talking about July's B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month and the impact of mental health trauma. I'm joined in the studio by Melanie Funches, Director of Mental Health and Wellness, Common Ground Health and Emotional Emancipation Circle Facilitator and Trainer, affectionately known as Mama Mel in the community. Karen Pashadley, EEC Master Facilitator, Certified Trainer and Coordinator. She coordinates EEC activities here in Rochester. That's Emotional Emancipation Circles here in Rochester. Lamar Hanna, EEC Facilitator and Mental Health Clinician, and Anderson Allen, EEC Facilitator and Yogi, also one of the healers of Monroe County's Healers Village. I'm glad you mentioned some of the parallels that happened in other cultures, because one of the things I really want to make sure, you know, we want to, on 13th, on the connections, we want to make sure that we educate, we want to make sure that we connect, and we know that for this particular program, while we're talking primarily about Black trauma and healing, I want to make sure that we have that connection so that all of our listeners can understand what that is. And there's some really good connections that you've already mentioned, the Trail of Tears. I talked about Birmingham, there's Columbine. I can tell you, after the bombing of Birmingham, in that church in Birmingham, my parents kept me and my brother and my sister much closer, and we got punished much harder for any deviations from a planned trip. Like when I'm coming home from school, if I was late getting home from school and I say, you know, well, why were you late? Well, Dad, I helped walk this girl home because she hurt her arm and I had to carry her books. And he looked me in the eye and said, obedience is better than sacrifice. He quoted scripture to me and then said, that's not happening again, right, son? Yes, sir, that's not happening again. But the point is that you have brought up the parallels. The shooting at Tops Market, yes, in Buffalo, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to drive by there. I happened to be in Buffalo, and I could not help but to say, I got to go here. I got to walk in and buy something. I had to shake that, right? We talk about 9/11. This nation is still feeling the effects of that, to the point that you get on a plane and you see somebody with a turban, and what are the thoughts that come to mind? Even though, as you, I think when we were talking, some of the most peaceful people on earth wear turbans, right?
Yes. You know, when we had the conversation, we talked about the Sikh.
Right.
Sikhs are some of the most peaceful people ever, right? But because they have an outward manifestation of their faith in the turbans that they wear and of their culture, they get targeted with hate. And the thing about what makes these traumas and all these things so pervasive and so bad is that there's associated hate and associated hurt and associated pain. And that's why healing is necessary. You know, in our Native brothers and sisters, whole languages were lost. So now they're doing things to heal themselves. Like they're going to the boarding schools and going to the cemeteries and reclaiming the remains of their people and burying them in the traditional way, in the old way. You know, you'll have, you know, all kinds of people who embrace things to help them. People plant trees. People do all manners of things to do a deliberate and intentional way of healing from a trauma. Yes. And we all, no matter what your trauma is, like after Columbine, how many people had a hard time sending their children to school? You know, it's like after Newtown, you know, it's like we have kids who are afraid of school because they're going to get shot in school.
Right.
You know, so this is not something that just affects us. There's all of us, everybody on under the sound of my voice has some way that they are connected to this thing.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to take a break, our only break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to start to talk about the components of healing, because we kind of set it up as to making sure that people understand what the hurt is. And now I want to talk about how we can get into the healing. Listeners, we're going to open the phones in the second half hour of this. Listeners, you may call us at 844-295-8255, or that's TALK, 844-295-TALK. Toll free, if you're in the Rochester area, you can call us at 585-263-9994. You can email the show. When you do that, use connections@wxxi.org. When we come back, we'll be glad to take your call and your questions you have, and we're going to look a little bit more into what are the components of healing.
I'm Evan Dawson, Monday on The Next Connections. What are schools teaching students about civics? A local college has a new program called American Cornerstones, immersing students for a year in civics. And then they return home over the summer to their towns or neighborhoods to really think about what they have learned about and write about civics in that context. We'll talk about how it will work Monday.
In case you just joined us, I'm Eric Logan, sitting in for Evan Dawson. Today on Connections, we're talking about July's B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Health Awareness Month and the impact of mental health trauma. I'm joined in the studio by Melanie Funches, Director of Mental Health and Wellness, Common Ground Health, an Emotional Emancipation Circle facilitator and trainer, affectionately known as Mama Mel in the community. Karen Pashadley, EEC Master Facilitator, Certified Trainer and Coordinator, who coordinates EEC activities in Rochester. Lamar, the Therapist, an EEC EEC facilitator and mental health clinician, and Anderson Allen, EEC facilitator and yogi, one of the healers of Monroe County Healers Village. We've talked in that first half hour about trauma, the nature of it, how it happens, who it impacts. It impacts all of us in one way or another, depending upon our what groups we belong to, our identity, all of that. But let's talk a little bit now about the components of healing. So, you know, for this, and once again, I'm going to share a personal story. This isn't about me, and I want to make sure that this program doesn't become about me. I'm going to also share something I didn't think I was going to share, but I'm going to do that. When this topic was suggested to me, I almost ran away from it. Okay, because I got the call from executive producer Megan Mack, and she said, hey, here's an idea that was brought to us. Are you willing to do this? And I kind of looked it over and I went, oh gosh, I'm still raw in some areas. I don't know if I could do this. I slept on it, and I said, I got to do this, right? I'm a part of, actually, I'm the chair of a national denomination, and it is largely a white denomination. And most of the people I went to school with out at Roberts Wesleyan University, and I serve on the board at Roberts Wesleyan University, most of the people I went to school with were people that I felt were all of similar like in mind, though mostly white. I think we're 38 black folks in a school of 600, right? In the era of Trump, there were some, not many, but some of my friends who could not utter the words Black Lives Matter. And that wounded me to my core. It has taken me years to get over that and to see where evangelical churches in some ways have gone in terms of what they've embraced and what they've rejected. So naturally, that's something that I've had to work on, because I can't be a leader in the national church operating out of a place of pain.
Absolutely.
Right? I got to be operating out of a place of wholeness, wellness, and resolve to do the right thing for the whole church, not just the black folks in the church, though that is a key consideration of mine, because they're folks I love and I want them to stay,
right?
But also so that I can help be a part of change and leadership within that environment. So let's talk a little bit about healing. What are the components of healing?
One thing I do want to acknowledge, first and foremost, is what you just did in this moment, acknowledging the fear, you know, like that you had. Acknowledging the fear that you had just trying to approach this kind of topic, acknowledging your own trauma, acknowledging the pain that you endured, going through your experience, doing your work, and also just recognizing that is the first part of it, you know, just making that confrontation. I think when I think about my work teaching poetry or doing yoga, I think those are both languages that are liberation. You know, it's about freedom. And the one way we really do allow ourselves to heal is having the brave space, the safe space to just say what happened, to say what is, and then really make a conscientious effort to say what is going to be next, what can happen next, you know, to imagine beyond that. I think a lot of times, McKinnon, I think is his name. He has this book called My Grandmother's Hands, and he talks about, you know, like white body supremacy, like deeply in that, but he talks about it and how it exists in so many different, you know, like groups of people, whether it's occupation or skin color or even gender. But when you actually sit with, you know, like this idea of what trauma is, you know, like how it lives in our body, one thing he really points out that is so profound to me is this idea that when you see, or, you know, like you have trauma that is unresolved for a long time or it goes unchecked, you start to believe that that is who you are, or people start to believe that's who
that's
you
right.
are. So we start to reflect that back to the world. But when you really sit with that pain, when you sit with that experience and you start to rewrite a new narrative around it, to reclaim it and say what the truth, your truth is in that, but say what the truth is, that is part of, you know, like just getting free.
Absolutely. And I love that you bring that book up, Anderson, because my book club actually just finished that book and it's a great read. There are a few different like nuggets in there that I think are excellent. And one of them is that when trauma is passed along and along and along, it starts to look like culture. And we often call it culture. Another point that he brings up that resonates with what you're saying about some white people not being able to say Black lives matter. White lives have not always mattered to white lives. So when we look at the Dark Ages in medieval Europe, we wasn't over there. Our indigenous brothers and sisters was not over there. And there were still people being tortured and mutilated in public places. Now, it wasn't called lynching then, but it was still happening. So one thing about healing, there also has to be an awareness. And I think some of our white brothers and sisters don't fully understand just how much trauma they have that's been passed along and that some people call culture now, but is really just unresolved and unaware in their minds and in their communities. So the first step is definitely awareness.
Excellent.
And I would add, I think, to switch this and add another component is gathering as community. That's a part of the healing. And I think that's what the emotional emancipation circles really allow for, is for us to come into a space which, let's be real, we don't often have spaces. As your story tells me, we learn resilience tools in the EEC. Your stories are making me exercise some of those because it is bringing up memories, right? And so how do we come together in that space? It's just us learning, who are we? What are the ways we can show up? Like you said, we have to make decisions daily to go back out here and do whatever work we're called to do. We have to have tools for that. Many of us don't have them. And so EECs allow us for that space to build. It's an 8-week curriculum. We come together for 8 weeks. It is probably the most fulfilling spaces, I know for me in my life, that I've had. And that's why I love facilitating them and bringing people together. You grow in community. And so our hope is that more and more of us will participate. Again, coming this fall, we have circles coming. So it's just like, how do we come together? And a part of that healing is, and I know our brother Lamar is going to talk about the keys that we talk about, but it's really about, there is a systemic way that we are going through this that allows us at the end to come up with what we call our escape plan. And that is our promise to ourselves about how we will move forward, knowing that this is continual growth, because as we deal with this every day, we have to continuously grow. There is, you know, you never stop learning is my whole thing. And so that's a part of what the EECs does, is it really gives us that space to be in community, like I said, that we don't often have. That's one of the pushbacks. You know, that's another question. Well, why can't we join? We need a space. And so that's a part of the healing, is having a space for us to come together.
And we hope that you set up a space for you to sort through the traumas that you have as well. We want our space, but we also want you to have yours. So any kind of traumas that are affecting the other communities, whether it be Sandy Hook or 9/11 or whatever, what have you, fully encourage them to also do some communal healing, because communal traumas need communal healing.
So since we've all been breathing this atmosphere of Black inferiority, how do you get over the fact that sometimes we get in a room together and don't trust each other?
You know, my grandmother always said, as you take on the master's amenities, you take on his attributes. The way that we have been, we were always communal for time immemorial, but only through the learned behavior of our enslavement, where you were told, don't trust them, don't trust them. And if you're told that you're no good, if I'm no good, then you're no good. How can I trust you? It's all part of the lie. It's all part of the lie. And what we've got to do is get in the room. And once we realize that it's part of the lie, then we can dismantle it and begin to step into our truth. Because it's not only about defying the lie, it's about embracing the truth. So when we say that we are village, you know, like even the name of my company, Ubuntu Village Works, Ubuntu means I am because we are. It's about the collective. And so if you translate it out, it means I am because we are village works.
Excellent. Lamar, could you talk a little bit about the keys that were mentioned just briefly?
Most definitely. So the keys are essentially the guiding principles for the EEC circles, and there are seven keys in total. The first is African spiritual origins. which is that as children of a divine force, our power, personal and communal, is boundless. And so when we're talking about trusting one another, this sets the tone for us to come in understanding that, and especially speaking as a therapist, some of the things that are going to come up in these circles are going to be difficult. Some of the things that you have talked about, that Mama Mel has talked about, that Karen has addressed, that I and Anderson have talked about, are difficult and challenging. But by understanding that awareness is the pathway to power, we can actually use this as a way to focus on how personal and communal power is boundless. And that personal power becomes even stronger once it's in community. The other keys are about our historical moments and movements, our ability to do great things, not just on this soil, but well before our enslavement. And it goes all the way down to spirit, spirituality, and spiritness. Because when we talk about healing, a lot of us, for me, healing is an emotional, a cognitive thing as a therapist. For my brother Anderson, it's a physical thing where you use your body in order to heal. There's also communal aspects to healing that Mama Mel and Karen are very well aware of. But you yourself, based on what you just told us as the leader of a congregation, know ultimately healing is spiritual. Mm-hmm. It is a spiritual act.
Yes.
And so it needs to be held to that high esteem.
And it's not a one-time event either.
No.
It's an ongoing thing. And I think that's the one thing that people kind of get caught up in as well. You know, like that kind of myth that once we go through a process, you know, like we're healed. And that's not at all how any of it works. You know, you are constantly going to be reminded of that pain. It might be grief that you are dealing with. And grief is another animal, you know, like that you tackle doing the work. But when you actually, I'll just say, you know, commit to this, commit to these principles, and not just the principles, just the wisdom of who we are, the culture, the lives that came before us. And it's not just something that you can look at through, you know, like a history book. You have your own lineage to look at, you know. I think one of the most profound things when I actually, like, I'm having this conversation, I was able to sit down with my twin brother and my father the other day. And he's incarcerated right now. But, you know, like when we had a visit, this was the first time my father has actually talked about his lineage, mm-hmm. talked about the paternal side of my family, which I have like no relationship to or connection to. But I found out my ancestor, like one of my ancestors, the farthest I can go back now in my history on his side is 1893. And that was a deeply profound like thing for me. And it was moving, you know, for me. But I think even in what we're saying right now about just having community, having a village, really having the space to have these conversations. And when I think about the notion, you know, like of showing up in a space and not trusting people, I can't help but show up in a space and trust Black folk. I'm just going to be honest when I say that.
Beautiful.
Like, that's my default, because I know what my lived experience has been walking into certain spaces and I'm the only Black person there.
That's right.
And what it also means to see another Black face, you know, and how often that happens for, you know, Black people who might work in certain spaces where they're probably not, you know, like in higher positions. But what it also means to see another Black face, you know, like in the kind of position that I am, you know. And for me, that is always a unique experience. But it does really mean to it means something to say, I see you, you know, like. To say I feel your presence here,
right.
You know, because that changes how we show up. That changes how we do relationship. We gonna funk up the space. I'm gonna just say
right.
like that, you know, like yes. and that's what we're supposed to do. You know what I mean? Without apology.
So I resonate with that strongly. I am a retired IT executive, and one of the things that I had to do was to travel to Atlanta to see how they were setting up their security from an IT standpoint. And Rochester's not absent of Black folks, but as an IT professional, you know, most of the other professionals that I ran into, especially on a statewide level, I walk into a room and I'm the only chocolate face in the room, often the only man in the room as well. Just, you know, the lack of diversity goes a whole lot of different ways. So I get to Atlanta and I walk into this big room where we've got the chiefs of police and fire and EMS and safety and da 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 da, and they're all Black. And I'm kind of going,
oh man, I'm home.
That's exactly what it is. You know, you have those moments like, welcome to Wakanda.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you and I have had that same experience with African American Leadership Development Program. There's a trust that gets developed during that time while we learn together how to be more effective in the communities that we serve. So those are all good things.
I just want to add to your point, and as a part of the EEC's key four is about human development and learning, and it really speaks to that trust issue. We have to know that we were taught not to trust one another. And so we come into this space and really talk about it. It's one of the most difficult keys because it means we have to uncover some stuff for ourselves. So I just wanted to just really acknowledge that's the beauty of this curriculum, is that it does really think about the full spectrum of our experience and how we need to heal.
Because the truth is also that we also do harm to one another.
Yes.
With that distrust, with that lack of seeing the humanity in my brother, in my sister. We do harm to one another. So it is also about healing internally, not just from the external factors.
Right. And knowing that it was a learned, a purposefully taught and learned behavior.
So in any situation where there is, I'm going to use the word dysfunction, even if you're just driving a car and your alignment is out, you tend to lean the car in one direction, one way or the other, right? We develop, all of us, in any situation, regardless of race, background, culture, coping mechanisms. All of those coping mechanisms aren't always helpful. So how do you go about dismantling those so that we can get from oppression to flourishing?
Right. And I guess I would say for me is it's all of this, right? Mm. And it's really us understanding this is a process. This is an acknowledgement. So we've got to do this acknowledgement of there is dysfunction. And it comes in all of us in this room. It represents differently for all of us. But it's understanding that, getting in community to talk about it. And then once things, it's an evolution too. So I like what Brother Anderson said. It's this notion of we get to a space. For me, it's like, oh, I just peeled a layer. Mm-hmm. There's another layer. And I see the slit, which I see the layers underneath that. So it's this constant piece of it. So I think for me is, how are we truly acknowledging this is a process? And for me, that's the beauty of it. It's like, and it's a beautiful journey. It's a hard and difficult journey. But for me, when we can do it in community, it will make our world much better. And if we show up better, look, like you said, it's gonna make everything gonna better.
Work. So an important part of my journey, right, was the fact that I attend a multicultural church here in the city, and we were willing to walk this journey together, especially in the post-Trump era. How do we do that? What are some other ways that people can show up as allies to help not just the Black community, but maybe even the wider things that we've been talking about in terms of trauma?
Wow. One thing is do your own work. Mm-hmm. The first thing. Mm-hmm. Because you
elaborate on that. Doing your work.
Because what I mean by that is to walk up to what are the lessons, what are the things that you were taught? What are the things that you heard? What are the things that are underneath for you? Because you can't help, like you can't help me heal if you're sick. Right? You know, and so the first thing is to, and part of that is honoring the fact that of our need for healing as well. You know, I think about implicit biases, right? And people, you know, everybody has them and what have you. And I think about 10 years ago now, I did a TED Talk about this and about how people need to look so that we can get underneath, because a lot of times you can't heal what you don't reveal. But we all have these things because we've talked about all hour, these get passed down. So we need to really, you know, investigate. And then once you do that, see how you can invest. Spend your privilege. If people need spaces to meet, spend your privilege. If you may not, you know, people want to have a meeting and you may want to provide them with beverages and say, well, I know I can't come to the meeting and that's all good, but I want to make sure y'all eat good. So here's a gift certificate. Here's some water. You know, you can use my church. You can use my space. I have this space. You can be here. You know, those are all things that you can do in when you want to move from allyship to co-conspiratorship for us all to get free together. Because my liberation is tied up with yours. Yeah. You will never be free as long as I'm bound.
One of the things I would add is just believe what you're hearing, right? Because I think so often, to your point, get over it, or did that really happen? Or that was so long ago, or I didn't do it. I think part of it is we need to believe what one another tells, right? And so often, I know for my experience is that we feel we got to get it in. So it's a truncated piece. It's like, but if we can just begin to have this notion of when I hear you speaking, I hear you.
Yes.
And I let that settle in. Not judging. I don't even need a response. But hear one another, believe it, and then we begin to tell more story. And then we can truly engage. And that's where the allyship, the co-conspiratorship comes in, because now we can truly talk.
Right.
But if you're taking snippets or you're judging it or fighting against it, we can never get the work done. So part of, for me, allyship and co-conspiratorship is about believing what someone is telling you.
Absolutely. And just to go further in that, you know, in black circles, we have a saying, but I feel you. And we need people to feel us. When we say I feel you, it means not just do I hear the words that are coming out of your mouth, but they're resonating and I'm putting them in my spirit and in my heart so that we can be united together.
Yeah.
And so in believing what you're hearing, I need you to feel me so that I know that you feel the pain, that you understand as much as you can, that I, like, you do not need to touch fire to know that it's hot. But I need you to believe you when I tell you I've been burned. I want you to be with me and believe that I've been burned and then treat me as someone who's been burned.
We have a thing in EECs called the Sahobona meditation. I hear you, I see you, I feel you. And for me, again, one of the most, that's a space you just come in. And you melt. It's like being seen, felt, and heard, which is a rare thing out in the air we breathe.
But that sounds like the core to almost any successful relationship.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right?
But you also have to hear, see, and feel yourself, too, in any successful relationship, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people get lost in the Black Lives Matter, I want to help so bad and I want to do this so much, but have you really processed your own stuff? Like Anderson said, have you done your own work? Have you started to do your own healing?
So what I love about this is that you're not basing allyship, co-conspiratorship in white guilt or guilt.
No.
But from a much more powerful place.
Absolutely.
Because guilt won't get you there.
Not at all.
White guilt does not serve us.
It does not. It does not. Wow. Yeah.
Guilt is apathy and it is not my job to do your feeling for you.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So I really do hope this conversation's been informative for you, our listeners. Melanie, please remind our listeners of where they can find resources and additional information.
So if you go to commongroundhealth.org, on commongroundhealth.org, there /EEC, you will find information about the Emotional Emancipation Circles. And once the dates are set, that's where you'll be able to go to register. Again, commongroundhealth.org.
I want to thank our guest today, our associate producer, Julie Williams, technical operator, Rob Braden. Thank you very much. And of course, thank you to Connections host, Evan Dawson, and executive producer, Megan Mack, for creating and maintaining this important forum. We'll see you on Monday.